I'm glad to have you here. The title of this talk is Masturbation, if you haven't noticed, if you just want to make sure you're in the right place. Okay? I was telling John before this started that I got into a couple of these talks in January when I decided I'd pick a couple of topics that I didn't think I knew much about and sign up to give a talk on them, and maybe it'd motivate me to do some research and everything on it. And this was one of them. And it worked out pretty well because I learned a little about it. And so some of you may want to consider that for next year. It is a beneficial thing. It takes a little work, but it works out. Well, anyway, on masturbation, versus the scope of this presentation, it's going to be we're going to focus on the autoerotic behavior, self-masturbation, not mutual masturbation. This is going to be primarily a workshop on an overview of what masturbation is in society today, what society views, how it views masturbation, and how it is part of our society. This is definitely not going to be a how-to course. I don't think that's necessary, especially in a convention of this type. This workshop is especially not designed to teach a person how to gain happiness through the fulfillment of a desire. I don't know how to do that. Okay. The historical aspect of the masturbation. One of the first early writings about masturbation, or what was thought to be masturbation, was in the Bible, in a book of Genesis. And it probably is contributes to masturbation's forbiddenness. It was based on a story of Onan. And there's an interpretation of this story which contributed to a lot of our views on masturbation today in society. For those of you who may not be aware of it, I wasn't until just a week or two ago, about Onan. Onan was ordered by his father in the Bible to have sex with his dead brother's widow and to produce offspring. It was said for his brother. His brother was wicked, and the father put his brother to death, so the widow was left. But Onan didn't want to have offspring from this widow, so he practiced what is called coitus interruptus, when the penis is actually withdrawn from the vagina before ejaculation takes place. Well, of course, now we know that that's not really effective. Sperm is actually entering in the area before that occurs. But in the Bible, at that time they thought that that was some type of effective thing. At least he did. And what they refer to this is putting his seed on the ground. And so his father felt that he was wicked because he was doing this, practicing this particular thing, and he was put to death by his father. So some kind of way this practice got tied into masturbation with the word seed on the ground, and then they started utilizing the term Onanism to describe masturbation. And there was a lot of hullabaloo about, the belief developed that you shouldn't practice Onanism, and like a lot of other things in sex that we don't understand, it gets all twisted around. So this early belief led to masturbation being a forbidden act. It was forbidden, but it was practiced a great deal. And attempts were made to control it by linking it with various illnesses. And the basis for this was another belief. The belief was that the expenditure of vital body fluids from men and women would be debilitating to the point of leading to a degenerative process in a person. So if you lost these fluids, you would kind of fall apart. So they associated various conditions with onanism or masturbation with tuberculosis, epilepsy, headaches, nosebleeds, asthma, heart murmurs, rashes, odors, diseases of the nerves from too much sexual excitement, poor eyesight, memory loss, pimples, acne, sluggishness, feeble-mindedness, boldness, bashfulness, and even developed myths which are used today, and I'm sure many of you are probably aware of. We could expand on this list, like growing hair on the palm of one's hand. And that's used today a lot to try to control masturbation in youngsters especially. Treatments, quote, treatments included genital cages, castration, clitoral mutilation. In the 1800s, two famous people were self-described experts. One was a gentleman by the name of Kellogg, from Kellogg Cornflakes fame. He proposed that cornflakes could quell masturbation. That was in 1888. He wrote a book. It was a bestseller in this country. In 1834, Mr. Graham of Graham Cracker fame also recommended males should eat less grain and avoid meats. They also should exercise strenuously and sleep on wooden beds. Mr. Kellogg also included other recommendations to try to quell this behavior. And it's included bandaging a child's genitalia, covering the genitalia with a cage-like device, or tying kids' hands, circumcision. And he went on after describing the pain after circumcision and what caused one to move away from that particular activity. Also suturing the foreskin shut. And for females, he recommended using carbolic acid and on the clitoris. Entrepreneurs decided to kind of get involved in this thing, and they developed a genital cage with springs, which was designed to hold down a boy's penis and scrotum in place. Alarm devices were developed which sounded when a boy had an erection. These ideas certainly weren't all adhered to, thank God, but the ideas reflected the perceptions of society, and they have influenced the current generations in our country, the way we think about things. So the medical profession finally let go of the idea that masturbation caused physical illnesses, but held on for a long time to the idea that it produced mental illnesses. So we have a heritage of ignorance, myths, condemnation, and terror, which is influential in today's society. People still believe that masturbation is bad for them. And just as bad, on the opposite end of the spectrum, is some people believe that if you don't masturbate, it's evidence of strong will and a control to be able to controlling a primitive desire. So you got both ends of the spectrum of power, myth in a ways, are not accurate. Religious traditions continue to be molded against masturbation. The current ideas in society include it is appropriate behavior for young people and people without partners. Also, society holds in most part that it has a taint of sexual failure among adults engaging in this practice. In other words, society thinks that these people should be labeled as being without the social skills or desirability to find sex partners. But actual studies have shown that the masturbation is not just for the sexually deprived, but it actually stimulates sexual activity, and sexual activity stimulates more masturbation. And masturbation's legacy and image contribute to a climate where it's rarely discussed, and thus arriving at the truth about masturbation is real difficult. So a climate exists of ignorance, anxiety, and public condemnation. Studies show it's not rare. It's real common in both sexes. It's common in partnered sex, and it's common in throughout all at many ages. So it's not just in young people. It occurs in everybody. Now, if you the frequency and prevalence of masturbation, that is a chart on that handout on the second page. We'll refer to that in a minute. But as far as the prevalence, 95% of men have masturbated in their lifetime, 60% of women, and that figure in women is rising every decade. In regard to frequency, if you look at the chart, that table 2.3, where it says I masturbate on average, you look down where it's at the bottom of the chart, where it says active, and that's equal lines A plus B. That means people that masturbate daily and those several times a week. And if you go across that line, you'll see in the ages 18 to 26, if you just look at the males, I'll point out something to you, 24% of men. Then the next age group, 25 to 38, age group, that's 28%. The next age group, 39 to 50, 23%. That's active. That's the people daily or several times a week. 51 to 64, 32%. And then at 65 and beyond, it drops off slightly in males, 17%. Now, females, a little different. If you see in the 18 to 26 group, 8% masturbate actively, meaning daily or several times weekly. The next group, 27 to 38 years old, 14%. The next, 39 to 50, 14%. Then they drop down a little bit. At 51, you see a significant drop in females, so as well as after 65. So males pretty much kind of hold their own until 65, and they drop off, whereas females they become more active at 27 to 50, and they drop off in frequency about 51. Now this is just data. You can interpret whatever you want to with this stuff. This is basically designed to show you what's going on in our society today, what the facts are, at least in this study, and then you can draw your own conclusion from it. So, frequency is also a few more facts, or some more information about the masturbation. It seems to be more frequent and more formally educated people. The more degrees you have, seems to be more common in those people. Also, in more secular groups. In regard to masturbation in marriage, 60 to 70% of men and women think it is a natural part of life and continues on into marriage. But now, it's interesting that 48% of females who are married believe their mates masturbate, whereas only 8% of men believe their mates masturbate. So, you got to look at that. Now, 85% of men and 45% of female with sex partners have masturbated in the past year. In regard to the religious nature, this was interesting. This particular study showed 60 to 70% of Protestants, Catholics, and Jews think masturbation is a natural part of life and continues in marriage. Now, that's an individual position. That doesn't represent the official view of each one of those religious groups. It's interesting that the people that actually make up the religious groups think the way they do, or at least that's their opinion. And masturbation and guilt, 20% of men feel a significant amount of guilt about masturbation if they do it less than once a week. only 20% feel some guilt. But if it's done once a week or more, that guilt factor goes up to 40% of men. Now, females are a little different in regard to guilt, according to these studies. 50% of females feel guilt if masturbating less frequently, 1 to 5 times a year. And the ones that masturbate more, once a week, they don't, only 14% feel guilty. So it's kind of gone both ways. I mean, you know, different directions. The other thing that I talked about, and I was bringing this stuff up because how the sexes can think different about some of these things, at least according to these sociological studies. There was one study on thinking about sex. And say males, 60% of males think about sex daily or several times a day, whereas most females, 70%, think about sex a few times a week or a few times a month. Again, this is just a general population. There are also other reported gender differences, and that being in males. Males are focused on orgasm. It seems to be a target. It's an all or none phenomenon. It's not a goal; it's the goal in men. And also, masturbation starts earlier in the life of a male as compared to females. Females, again, according to these studies, have multiple goals. Masturbation, of course, is one of them, but it's not the only one. They seem to be more interested in getting to know themselves through masturbation and enhancing pleasures. It also states that a female can enjoy sex without orgasm, probably easier than males. And masturbation begins slightly later on in life in females than males, usually between 20 and 30 years old. Also, a lot of females don't start masturbating until after they've actually started engaging in intercourse. It seems to be sometimes after that, again, in society. Some possible explanations for some of these differences include, in the male, the penis is more exposed, that particular organ that's related to the sensation that we associate with pleasure, and therefore is more subject to spontaneous or accidental acts of stimulation. And then it gets handled during the process of urination from the time you're fairly young. So something's happening in males that stimulates this thing, this masturbation. Males probably a little younger. Also, arousal time is much quicker in males than females. So when something happens to stimulate the male, it get into arousal real quick. Females usually take a little longer to get fully aroused. And society itself is less strict on males than females. So that might account for some of these differences that these studies have alluded to in regard to males and females. Healthy masturbation. I'm going to list a couple of things of what people thought they think is healthy. Now, you got to realize that we are dealing again with one of the most common but least discussed activities known to mankind. We must be willing to change our beliefs if we're going to engage and understand what healthy masturbation is. We must develop the basic belief that it is acceptable in general. And it is also acceptable in a particular individualized situation, depending on whether your sponsor says it's okay. So you don't want to make it up for you how many times it is, how much you want to do it. You really got to talk to someone else, because I'm not able to make that decision. When things come to sex, I need help. Also, we need to use masturbation as a tool for self-discovery, as long as it's honestly used in that regard. So it's okay to use it to enhance one's sexual awareness and for self-discovery, as long as it's used honestly in that way. It's also important to maintain an openness and willingness to confront oneself over masturbation. It's also said in relationships, it's a vital part of building a trust to gradually open up to to one's pardon on the subject of masturbation. I don't think it's advisable to just walk in the first time you meet someone and tell them how many times you masturbate, but you certainly don't want to keep it. You know, you want to move into it. It's like all of our sexual activities, slowly, gradual, as you build trust. But one must deal with the associated shame and guilt, much of which is ingrained in us over masturbation. If we don't, we're going to get into a lot of denial and stuffing of these emotions, and it's unhealthy to do that. So more specific guidelines for healthy masturbation include, I'm going to list five of them, I think they're on your handout. Yes, sir.
Can you address that issue in a little bit more detail?
What's that?
The one about not feeling guilt.
Okay. Why don't we just put that off, and we'll have the question asked and go through it, okay? If we don't have any, if anybody needs one, we could. Any more handouts back there? If not, well, I'll give some to you if anybody wants one afterwards. Yes, sir.
I'd like one.
Okay. I'll make. Well, afterwards, I'll get it all worked out. I'll leave some out there. Okay. So the guidelines are, and this came from Patrick Korn's journal, Sexual Addiction Compulsivity. These guidelines about masturbating. One. Healthy masturbation. The person must masturbate without the use of sexual toys. Two, the person is connected to himself or herself in the environment during the experience. Three, the person can share the experience before and afterwards. In other words, it's not a secret activity. Four, if an individual is in a committed relationship, the other person can be part of the experience. That's healthy. And the fifth thing, the person experiences a connection with oneself and it's his or her spiritual core after the experience. So those are things that characterize healthy masturbation. Now, unhealthy masturbation, again, there's no magical formulas. There's a wide spectrum as to what's healthy and what's not healthy, but if we engage in this kind of dialect, and we can better define those things. And that's one of the points, I think, of a workshop of this type. But some signs of possible unhealthy masturbation, and all this must be individualized, is one, frequency, a greater frequency than the norm. And according to these studies, it would be more than once a day. That would be a sign of a possible unhealthy activity. Interference with relationships. If it's interfering with your ability to develop and make connections with other people. If it promotes isolation, not necessarily sexual isolation, social isolation, that's unhealthy. If it is enhancing one's self-centeredness, that's unhealthy. If you use other people during the masturbation act, that's unhealthy. Masturbating in public, that's not only unhealthy, it's illegal. Okay. And if you're experiencing, if you're harming yourself physically during the masturbation process, that's unhealthy. If you have excessive guilt over, that's unhealthy. If it becomes a compulsive act, that's unhealthy. If you have a misaligned fantasy life during the process of masturbation, that's unhealthy. I would think, and again we could get into it briefly, I would think that would mean having a fantasy over something, maybe a person that's using another person. That's not that you're not really in a committed relationship with. Yes, sir?
I can. I think one of the things that would apply to me, like in my case, my fantasies involve myself as a female, which is something totally outside of what is real.
Okay, that's a good answer. Now we'll get into these things. Why don't you just dry them down? When I get through, we can go back through them. Yep. Not telling the partner about the masturbation. Seeking enhancement aids. Trying to control the masturbation, especially alone. That's unhealthy. And basically doing what we want to do. That's the core of addiction. Doing anything we want to do. So, trying to achieve happiness by using masturbation to fulfill a sexual desire is probably unhealthy. There's a big difference between experiencing happiness and pleasure. Two different things altogether. Okay. Well, special problems. And now this is the role of a parent dealing with masturbation. In infants and children, first we must accept the universal nature of self-stimulation in infants and children. It goes on. It's going to happen. So we have to accept it. We should do everything possible to avoid shaming the child that we are responsible for, that we deal with as adults. So, and we have to deal with our own shame and guilt over masturbation before confronting the child. So we may need help with that, but that we don't need to transfer or project our own shame and guilt onto that particular activity. When we confronting and discussing masturbation with children, we need to keep it simple. KISS method, keep it simple, stupid. Don't try to become an expert and try to give them a speech, etc., and talk about all the stuff we know that we learned in this whatever about it. So the other, and one thing that seems that was suggested also was if you notice a child who is in the process of self-stimulation, you might just want to just direct their attention to something else. Just say, well, you know, let's go to movies or something. And they'll just stop. Most of the time, these real young children are doing this, they're not even aware of it, that it's going on. They're not conscious that it's happening. If it becomes excessive and they need to be confronted, we again need to confront them in a gentle, kind fashion and do it in privacy. Certainly want to shame them by bringing it up in front of the whole world that they need to stop this particular activity. And only do it after much contemplation. Think it through before you do it. It's not necessary that you go right over and stop that right away. I think it's more important that you think about it a while and decide how you're going to do it. And if you're not sure, talk to other people about it, people that will be understanding. So you want to use the KISS method. You want to be humble, even after this talk, you know. And you want to use a loving approach. Like, talk to them like you would have liked to have been talked to when you were a child. It's also been suggested that you tell them it's something that's done in private. That seems to be a real important point. And they equilibrated it to, like, picking your nose. You know, don't pick your nose in private. You want to do this type of activity in private, whether we like it or not. Society frowns on this particular activity being done in public. And they can kind of relate to that kind of thing, I think, pretty well. After you speak to them, you probably just ought to wait for questions to come. You don't want to fill them up with all kind of information and too much and overload them. But it's very important to let them know that you're open to questions and we'll try to find the best answers available. You'll try to find the truth about this behavior, and it's an ongoing process. You want to avoid at all costs is misinformation and myths, and you want to avoid giving them a speech or a lecture on that particular activity. With older kids, those in the teens that you encounter this activity, you really don't want to try to catch them. You don't want to become part of the masturbation police force. Okay? And a lot of that goes on. And one of the things that is recommended that you knock before entering your child's room. And you also be prepared to walk away from the room if you knock and the child asks you not to come in right now. Don't get into pushing them and trying to control them and manipulate them with this type of stuff. So in summary, masturbation is widely practiced but hardly discussed among humans other than being condemned. Masturbation truths can only replace myths through honest, open discussion. We, us sex addicts, have the experience of healthy as well as unhealthy masturbation. And by applying the principles of the program to this dilemma of mankind, I think we sex addicts can actually help mankind get closer to the truth of masturbation and away from all these myths that surround masturbation. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk to you today. And what we'd like to do is they want to try to get most of this on tape. So why don't, if you have a question or comment, why don't you come up here and do it, okay? In a mic. Would that be okay? No? Well, if not, I'll repeat it. If you don't want to, of course, it's okay. Any questions?
Two microphones, I see.
I believe so.
Okay. This one can go so far. That's it. They've got it.
All right. Any comments or questions? Yes, sir.
I'd like the issue of, and I'm not going to go I'd like the issue of guilt discussed.
Okay. Anyone have any comments about that? Guilt, the issue of guilt associated with masturbation. What appears to be a healthy
number. It says several times a week for someone in my age.
It just says, you know, that, I don't know if you can come to a conclusion by that, but it looks like that several times a week is done in your age group, and that's normal.
That's
what I see.
Oh,
okay. So you, as far as frequency, you fall in the norm, whatever the normal is, according to that study.
I guess the issue still is guilt and why I feel guilty even when I'm doing something that I know is healthy and it feels healthy, and I feel guilty and I feel shame.
Because we're sex addicts.
Well, a lot of that has to do with what we've been, it's been ingrained in us. In the generations before us. And the more we know about it, the less guilt we'll feel. If we know that people are engaging in these things and it's acceptable in certain circumstances, and we thought the guilt will probably dissipate slowly. But what else? Anybody?
I'm Walt, sex addict.
Hello.
I've been in recovery 9 years. In the first several years of my program, my bottom line was no masturbation. It led to too many other things. It was like an alcoholic taking one drink. Masturbation for me was taking a drink, and I realized I was utterly powerless over it, and I couldn't even begin to discuss healthy or unhealthy. I just couldn't do it. But then as I got comfortable in recovery and got centered about sexuality and entered a relationship where she was a psychologist, and she helped me experiment with the sexuality and find this definition of healthy and unhealthy as I defined it. And what came out of all that was that, one, I discovered that I could have masturbation without any kind of fantasy whatsoever. And that was just totally new to me.
How?
With much difficulty. But, just a matter of focus and using my partner to help me focus. And I just had no fantasy whatsoever. Also, I looked at what was healthy masturbation for me. And I took apart, I used Pat Carnes' SAFE formula that he has in his book, Secretive Abuse of Feelings Empty. And it's secretive, and you know, and it has a double life type of feeling to it. I basically looked at all my sexuality in that term. Was what I was doing something that would be okay being printed in the Denver Post the next morning? And to me, I was brought up feeling that masturbation was healthy, normal. People did it, men did it many times a week. You know, and I didn't have that core belief that it was bad, that I was bad if I did it. And so that wasn't a problem, you know, being able to tell somebody that I had masturbated, it brought up no shame or guilt for me at all. But what was shameful for me and what I felt a tremendous amount of guilt over was if I had an inappropriate fantasy. And what I considered inappropriate was euphoric recall, especially euphoric recall where it was an abusing situation. Or I would fantasize inappropriately if I was in a committed relationship. My bottom line was no sex outside a committed relationship. So if I was fantasizing about the woman down the street that I saw, that was inappropriate for me too. Other forms of inappropriate fantasy, my bottom line is no pornography, and I consider pornography voyeurism, and I'm a classic voyeur. If I start fantasizing about, just voyeuring women in general, then it's inappropriate. Now, if I fantasize about my ex-wife and some very loving situations that I was in with her, you know, maybe many years ago, because we had, a lot of our marriage is very healthy and good. If I fantasize in that way, I don't feel shameful about that. I don't feel guilty over that. And particularly if I fantasize about the partner I'm currently with, I don't feel bad about that. But I do take into account the isolation part, which is mentioned here. You know, I didn't want to end up using masturbation as my only way of being sexual. I certainly wanted to consider, I'm in a partnership, I want to be sexual with my partner and make love, not have sex, that sort of thing. I also found when I got into recovery, I had a lot of ritual masturbation. In the morning to get up, at night to go to sleep, anytime I went to the restroom, publicly in the car, I had all these little rituals that I did. And so when I started experimenting with masturbation, I had some slips where I'd start getting into that, ritual stuff. And I found through, trial and error that I was actually able to stop masturbating once I started it. And you mentioned that men have a tendency to race quickly to orgasm, and that's the goal and the mission. And I found that as I got healthier with it, even that if I found myself in a situation where it didn't feel good, or I was saying, why am I doing this, or I'm not connected, I can stop doing that. I can stop once I start masturbating. And that was totally a foreign thing to me 9 years ago. And once I started, there was no get out of the way. And, this is something that's just been a progressive level of healthy sexuality for me, a way of doing that. And I haven't been in a relationship now for 3 years. So, it's not just a relationship connected thing for me now, because I'm not in a caring, committed relationship with the woman. So I hope that you find that helpful.
Thanks for sharing.
I don't recall the exact words. I'm Richard. I'm a sex addict.
Hi, Richard.
But you said something about in the healthy masturbation that I guess I've lost the thought, but there was something about that we don't do it just for the gratification. I thought that's why we did it, but I...
You talked about using it as a tool for self-discovery.
It's a tool for self-discovery.
But there was a flip side.
I said the desire for pleasure. I just said you may not get happiness from fulfilling the sex of desire. I'm not saying that's unhealthy. But doing it is not unhealthy. It's how you do it. Put behind. Yes, sir.
My name is Jack. I'm a grateful recovering sex
addict.
I guess I'm in the minority. I dislike the use of the word healthy for masturbation at all. My experience with it, to be similar to other people spiritually or nicotine or alcohol. And I think I'll make a little joke here. Perhaps one day they could put a little label on every penis, you know. No, you know, don't mess with it, it'll become a habit. But seriously, it's no gift that masturbation can become addiction very, very quickly. And I think that should be explained in all these textbooks, how these people do all the writing, you know. So anyone can tell you who's been in an addicted situation on masturbation, it is a living hell. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Bernie, and I'm a sex addict.
Hi, Bernie.
I've studied this for a long time. I'm different than Mark. Is that your name, Mark? And I grew up with a lot of shame. I was raised Catholic, and basically masturbation for me was condemnation. I was condemned for it, and shame and guilt is always tied in with it. And when I first got into recovery, I tried to, well, I always just had this belief that masturbation was wrong and shameful. Emotionally, I guess I had that belief. Intellectually, I thought you could have healthy masturbation. But the thing that I came to see was that all of my sexuality, because of my upbringing, I think, is tied to shame, that, which really helped me with masturbation. When I have normal sex with my partner, that brings up shame too. So I came to see that the shame was not, it was just like a conditioned response to sexuality, and that what I have to do, what I do in my spiritual practice is I do this meditation practice, it's Buddhist nature, and the idea is to just look with awareness at all your behavior, just look with awareness, don't stop yourself from doing something that you can't really control, you know. By beating up on myself, I'm not going to stop masturbating or whatever I'm doing. And so just look deeply with awareness. And I've come to see how the shame is what, it just comes up. It just comes up, and then it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. It's just there, you know. And I finally came to see that, you know, to quit trying to control my behavior because of the shame, just to look at the shame, just it comes up every time, it comes up in all sexual acts, and just keep looking with awareness. And it's helped me immensely, especially what I thought when you said, to be able to share. One of the things I found really helpful is to share with my partner if I masturbate, to not make it a secret thing. That helps to let go of the shame. It's like, as long as I'm hanging on to it, I'm feeling bad about it. If I share it with someone else, my partner or my sponsor or someone, it takes away that shame. And I'm able to masturbate without any fantasies, you know. It's not, I don't know how I did that, you know, because I'm a voyeur and I've done that for my whole life, but I don't think about it. It's really just with me, and it's not, I don't think about other people or anything, you know. And and you know, I feel like I have, I know what compulsive masturbation is, and I feel like what I do now is different. And really, the main thing is just accepting, no matter what. If I masturbate, just instead of condemning myself, which I do automatically, just look at that. Well, what went on here? What was going on? And look deeply. Look with awareness. And that seems to have helped me to heal from this compulsion kind of thing, and to into what I feel is healthy sexuality and masturbation. Part of that. Thank you. Okay.
How do you tell a partner that you're going to masturbate?
words that you say when the partner looks at it in a condemning way, a shaming way. Okay. Partner being, you know, the wife.
Okay. I think in one way, it's like you tell a partner about other things that have to do with sex or whatever, gradual.